This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. It's good to have you with us on this State of the Union Tuesday. President Trump's State of the Union address is tonight, the very first of his presidency. It's expected to be heavy on the economy. And we want to know, is the economy working for you?
Michael from Centerville, Utah. As a disabled person dependent on Social Security, the fact Congress denied raises for three of the past 5 years does not work for me or for millions of others.
This is Lisa from Silver Creek, New York. I feel that my investments have done well in the past year, but I believe it's due to the work of President Obama and his administration.
This is Nikki from Arlington, Texas. The economy seems stagnant for those of us on the lower end of the socioeconomic ladder, specifically in trade fields.
Your voices on the state of the economy in early 2018.
This is Jane calling from San Rafael, California. My expectation is that I am loving the boom and expecting the crash. It happens. I don't want to be surprised, so I'm just expecting it.
Jane from California feeling wary there. Meanwhile, some of you are feeling a lot better.
This is Anne from New Jersey. We have a modest retirement investment portfolio. I'm a teacher, my husband is a first responder, and we've seen it make some nice growth. If the economy continues to grow as it has over the past year, we believe we'll be able to fund a modest retirement starting in our 60s. That's a much more hopeful outlook than we had just a few years ago.
Hello, my name is Trent. I'm calling from Fairfield, California. I've definitely saw an uptick in my 401k performance.
Well, President Trump isn't the first president to take credit for the economy. He likes to own it when companies get that photo op, giving bonuses to workers after the tax cuts were signed. And he tweets all the time about the booming stock market as his administration rolls back regulations. The president will almost certainly talk a lot about the economy tonight, but Americans watching on TV in prime time, did they have a sense that the economy is working for them? Charlie Herman is business editor for WNYC. Hi, Charlie.
Hey, Todd.
Well, Charlie, we just got a real mix of feelings about the state of the economy from Takeaway listeners. You heard it there. Do we have any sense how Americans are feeling about the economy broadly? And then we're going to talk about people's personal finances. But what about people's perception of the broad economy?
Well, I'd say right now that one of the measures is something called consumer confidence, and that is at a 17-year high. So that's an indicator of how people are feeling about their own situation, about the economy in general. And I would say that if you just look at the numbers that are out there, they're all looking very good. You know, you have unemployment at the lowest rate that it's been at in 17 years. You have a stock market that's hitting at record levels. You have an economy that has been growing now for several years. So if you look at where things are at right now, there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic about where the economy is going, and not just here in the United States, but really around the world.
Now, let's talk about some of those points. How about unemployment, Charlie? You just mentioned it. 4.1%, pretty close to what they call full employment. What does that number tell us about the true health of the economy?
What that says is that there is a strong likelihood that we could actually see wages start to grow up. And this has been the real conundrum, the real puzzle for economists and people who study these numbers closely, is that normally when the unemployment rate gets to a level that it's at right now, companies start having difficulty hiring people, and so they have to start offering more money to entice people to come work for them or leave another job and come work for them. Oftentimes the way to do that is by higher wages. So what's interesting, though, is that that hasn't really been happening, and we're starting to get a bit of an inkling that that might start happening now. There was a report that came out this week from economists who work at companies, and they are saying that they are having to start paying people more. If you look at the numbers in the recent jobs report, what you're seeing is that people who are at the lower end, maybe who don't have a lot of education or maybe they're in a trade job, if you think about the comments that Nikki made, that actually those wages may be starting to increase. And that's really important because those are people who are not making as much money and perhaps are not benefiting as much from the economy growing the way that it is. And so if those people start to see their wages rise, they'll start feeling better. They could start spending more. That, again, will just keep the economy going.
So, Charlie, an idea there that after more than two decades of stagnated wages in this economy, middle class and maybe lower middle class people in America might actually be about to start to get ahead a little bit. I want to talk about wages, though, in relation to the other costs that people have to pay all the time. We've got a listener from Fort Worth, Texas, who wrote to us and said, as the housing market gets more expensive, my wages stay roughly the same. So, Charlie, the question there is, what do we know about wages in relation to all of the other things you have to spend money on? From Fort Worth, Texas, they're talking about mortgages, there's tuition, there's the cost of living, there's even inflation.
Well, inflation has been relatively low. I mean, the wage increases that we've been seeing have been about the same as inflation. So people are kind of just keeping up on inflation. Also, things like energy prices, what you pay for oil and gas or to heat your home, those have been relatively low, and interest rates have been really low. So while home prices may be going up, and that's difficult for those people who aren't seeing their wages going up, because interest rates are low, it does make mortgages more affordable. And so these are all things that have actually been beneficial right now. Obviously, there's a huge amount of student debt that people are burdened with now that they're trying to pay off, and it would really be beneficial if they were making more money, if the economy were doing better. So I don't mean to downplay that, but a lot of the other factors that could really be pinching people, at least when you look at the numbers, aren't indicating it. And, you know, of course, the hope now is that with unemployment as low as it is, people might actually start making some more money and feel better about the economy.
Well, Charlie, let's talk about one other corner of the economy, the stock market. The president loves to tweet about the booming stock market. Here's one listener who's on board.
This is Bruce Bennett from Plano, Texas. There's been a night and day change in the economy from a lethargic recovery to a dynamic growth scenario over the past year. This is happily reflected in my investment portfolio.
Charlie, Bruce looks at his portfolio and he says, there it is, ink on paper, the economy's booming.
I would argue, though, that the stock market has been booming now for years, going back to the Obama administration, really for almost a decade. It has been on the up and up. And of course, there has been a huge surge in the last year. Part of that is because of the tax cuts that just went through. So a lot of companies are happy to see their tax rate go from 35% down to 21%. There's also been a loosening of a lot of regulations and that companies are feeling very optimistic and investors are feeling optimistic about that. But one thing to keep in mind there is only about half of American households own some sort of stock. You know, there has been a broad concentration of stock ownership amongst the very smallest group of people. About 10% of American households now own more than 84% of all the stocks, according to one recent survey. So while the stock market is going up, and that can be a very good thing, especially for people who have 401ks or have really put their money into the market, not all the benefits are necessarily being dispersed to everybody within the economy. And, you know, I think the stock market is often kind of this indicator that the economy is doing well, but the two of them are not connected. The stock market is responding to things that are happening with corporations, and it's not always going to be a measure of what the economy is. But this has been a long time trend. And of course, the worry is, what are those things that might actually send the stock market down? You know, if the political impasses in Washington continue, if there's no budget, whatever happens with the Russian investigations, these are all factors that could have an impact on where the stock market goes going forward.
President Trump is likely to be heavily on the economy tonight when he addresses Congress and the nation. Charlie Herman is on the economy now, business editor for WNYC. Thanks, Charlie.
Thank you, Todd.
The reality is that we're in an urgent situation, and the consequences will grow worse each day if we do not act. And if our nation continues on this course, the economic damage will be painful and lasting.
Let's move from the American economic scene now to how the economy is doing in the rest of the world. The economic crisis of 2008 shook the world. 10 years later, every major global economy is growing, but economic growth doesn't necessarily mean equity. And the question is, where is all the new wealth in the world going? We turn now to Stephanie Siegel, senior fellow with the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, Todd.
Well, Stephanie, is the rising tide lifting all of the boats? Who's benefiting? Who's accessing all of this wealth?
Well, the point that you made just a minute ago, that the recovery we've seen has been quite broad-based. So it's emerging markets, it's advanced economies, it's low-income economies that are all doing well in the current cycle. And it's also a fact that we've seen income inequality across countries, and in particular in advanced economies, increasing at the same time we've seen growth picking up.
I mean, the U.S. has seen growth, but a large proportion of that new wealth going to the top. Middle-class wages stagnant for decades in this country. Is that the case in emerging economies, places like China and Brazil? Their middle classes are growing rapidly, right?
Correct. So in the case of China and some other emerging markets, you have seen increasing income inequality at the same time that you've seen increasing overall level of incomes. So I think in those cases, you see kind of a rising tide raising all boats. The reason that advanced economies are different in this case is growth is slower, so you still have a growing economy, but that increasing income inequality means that the gains are accruing more to the top. And until very recently, folks at the bottom are actually not seeing their overall incomes increasing.
Well, let's look outside of the industrialized countries in Europe and the United States. Are there countries in this world economic boom that are doing a better job in using economic growth to improve the condition of the poor?
Well, I think it's a fairly mixed bag across EMs. I think the case is, as I was mentioning before, some of the EMs that have seen the most rapid growth, and China kind of comes to mind immediately, you have seen there as well this increasing income inequality.
EMs you talk about, those are emerging markets.
Correct. For those countries that have put in place certain programs to redistribute that wealth, there are some that have actually done a better job. The one that comes to mind there is Brazil, but I would note that you've seen that at the same time that Brazil's economy actually shrunk in 2016 and grew only around 1% this past year. So it's hard to talk about the state of EMs in generalities. I think it's really a function of what's happening in their own domestic economy.
So, Stephanie Siegel, we've seen movements in some of the big Western economies. The U.S., the U.K. are examples. Tinges of protectionism, withdrawing or renegotiating trade agreements, or in the case of the U.K., of course, pulling out of the European Union. What's the effect?
Well, protectionism and those tendencies toward protectionism versus globalism have been with us, I think, forever. So the presence of protectionist tendencies, I don't think, is anything new. But as you pointed out, we are seeing that the appeal of protectionism and really playing to domestic audiences by playing up the ills of globalization has really been a common theme in domestic politics. And so I think it is still very much a real risk. We're looking at how Brexit is implemented. We're looking at NAFTA renegotiations and waiting to see the outcome of that. And we're seeing countries challenge the WTO. So I think those are just examples of where the march of globalization is certainly not assured. And there are some real risks there.
Stephanie Siegel, thank you for being here.
Thank you very much.
Stephanie Siegel is Senior Fellow with the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.